This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Marcela Garcia. This year, we bid farewell to Kevin White. We rolled out the welcome mat for Steve Wynn. And Ray Allen said, so long, Celtics. From politics to sports, we're going over the year's local news. Here with me in Studio 3 are City Councilor Tito Jackson, his Spanish name.
Yes.
Howard Manley of the Bay State Banner, and Sue O'Connell representing Bay Windows and the South End News.
Hello.
Welcome back,
Happy
everybody.
New Year.
Hey, Happy New Year.
Thanks for being here. Before we begin, I'd like to remind our listeners that you can join us and calling the call us at 877-301-8970. Tell us, what is your local story of the year? Again, 877-301-8970. So let's start with the mayors. This was a big, big year for mayors. We lost Kevin White. Mayor William Lantigua continued his problems in Lawrence. Holyoke Mayor Alex Morris made headlines when he flip-flopped about casinos. And then, of course, Mayor Thomas Menino, who had been in the hospital until today, or his rehabilitation center. Now he's back in the office. But he basically has been an absentee mayor. I'd like to ask you, Councillor Jackson, what is your take on what is City Hall like without Mayor Menino? What has it been like?
Exactly. Oh, and we're wrapping up right now. That's exactly.
Really?
No. So I would say when it comes to Mayor Menino, he's always been a very hands-on mayor. When it really comes down to it, I look at it as a family member. If one of my family members were ill, I don't wish them ill will. I want them to get better. I actually analogize it with my staff. How would you feel if I was in the office for 2.5 months? They would hate me, right? Because I pay attention to every single detail rather than being out there. So, you know, I wish him well. And I think when it comes down to City Hall, the business at City Hall has been going smoothly. We were able to get our redistricting done, which is really, really important. We're also contemplating a new student assignment plan. So all of those things are continuing to move forward. I wish him the best, and it's my expectation, and I come at it from a historical perspective, that he will be around for a long, long time.
You know, the reality about Mayor Menino, the rap against him is that he's not a delegator, right? You know, we hear that all the time. But the reality is that you can't be in office that long without having staff members who are, A, devoted to you and know what you would do in that situation. So I'm sure City Hall and the city issues are moving along swimmingly, even though he may not have his finger on the pulse the way he usually does. I mean, right after about halfway through his hospital stay, before the rehab stay, there was a news that came out that Boston was the most gay livable city in the world. You know, and we get these surveys all the time from travel places. And I didn't cover it in the Bay Windows. I just, you know, it wasn't newsworthy.
Correct.
To me. And the gay and lesbian liaison on Thursday called to yell at me that the mayor, you know, in that kind of nice way, the mayor's staff yells at
it
you like,
it sounds
what
like things are working. Yeah, yeah. That's
yeah,
actually,
you know,
normal. So
he's running things.
Yeah, you know, and I'm, you know, we were wondering, I could see the mayor in the hospital bed going, what are you doing? You know, so to Councillor Jackson's point, I think he could probably be out of the office for another 12 months and things would still go swimmingly. He's missed at the tree lightings. I mean, this is a mayor, you know, for folks who may not know, who is there. You can run into the mayor 15 times in a week just doing your job in the mm-hmm. city. So,
cutting ribbons, inaugurations,
yeah, just,
everything.
You know.
That's the great thing about Mayor Menino is that he is, as Tito shares, is that he's hands-on. And for the most of us, we really don't want to get into the nitty-gritty of city administration. Mm-hmm. We really don't. But what Menino has done, and this goes for every neighborhood, particularly in Roxbury, you look at the number of developments that are going on
There's
right now.
There's a crane in Dudley Station.
Right now. And that is the legacy of a guy who really does believe in all Boston neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And you may disagree with this, that, or the other thing, but at the end of the day, he has reshaped Dudley Square. It will be Jamaica Plain is also going through mm-hmm. a number of different, just magnificent renovations. And that's all part of Mayor Menino's, and you know, and Tito, I know you're sort of excluded from this, but I know I have shaken Menino's hand at least 18,000 times.
Mm-hmm. I'm only in the 17,000, so I'm hoping to get there. I was in the mayor's youth leadership corps when I was 17 and skinny.
Right. Long time
so
ago.
So that's a whole long, long time ago.
And, you know, when my business partner Jeff Coakley and I purchased Bay Windows and South End News, the mayor was the first call to tell us we were crazy and out of our minds, you know. And I don't know any major city where a mayor will call a community newspaper to say, you know, good luck, you're crazy.
Right. So staying in politics, without a doubt, the biggest local story in national, too, the national story of the year was the Elizabeth Warren and Scott Brown Senate campaign and the subsequent victory of Elizabeth Warren. Do you do any of you see any trends? Because in that race, we saw Marisa Franco, a woman, running, too. And then, of course, we may have a bunch of potential races. And if now that Congressman Markey is going to run for Kerry's seat and all this, do you see any women out there that would run for office next year?
Well, you know, we've already got Congresswoman Tsongas, who's Nikki Tsongas, who's already obviously in office, that her name has been thrown into the ring. I mean, I think that it's always been interesting that in Massachusetts, where we look at ourselves as this very progressive state, we don't have that many female elected officials. Right. I've often made the argument it's because women can do other things in Massachusetts. They don't just have to, like, the only way they can get forward in a state is to run for office.
Well, you're very gracious.
Yeah. You know, we can actually, you know, own newspapers and, you know, be publishers and editors and whatnot. But I think that it does sort of just highlight the issue that I think the Elizabeth Warren issue is more that you don't have to be part of the machine as it's working. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think she was a machine place candidate in terms of the Democrats, but you can still, you know, just come on with a fresh game plan and run.
Well, I can tell you, and compare her to Martha Coakley, whose name is also being thrown out there, is that what Elizabeth Warren did is that she went through all the neighborhoods of color. Mm-hmm. That, to me, is the story of 2012, when, you know, now if you want a statewide office, you have to speak to brown and black and gay and lesbian. You have to. And that the numbers prove it out. Warren and folks were a little shocked that Scott Brown lost and that, you know, folks outside of Boston State. But I mean, yes, Massachusetts does have this sort of weird reputation. But in this particular case, Warren really worked the crowd. She seemed, when I was just looking at all the photos over the year from the Bay State banner, and you had Elizabeth Warren with the Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity.
And the Latinos,
at Juneteenth. At
Alpha Phi Alpha at Juneteenth.
And you had the black preacher's land hand, and she has the same look that she really wants to serve. Yep. And I think, unlike Scott Brown, who sort of at the last minute came in and wanted to do some things, but it was too late. And so if you want to run, you have to go through those neighborhoods. And Ed Markey, and I think any of the candidates, really have some bridge building to do in the next year and a half.
You know, we at South End News had the similar experience where I said, do I really need another Latinos with Elizabeth Warren photo? I mean, I've been running them week after week after
especially
week.
Especially South End,
No, I wholeheartedly agree. The banner did a great job covering the story from day one. But when it really comes down to it, we saw with Governor Deval Patrick, and we saw it with Andrea Cabral, and also President Obama. You need communities of color to engage. You need them to vote in high numbers. And as a Democrat, you actually have to step forward and reach them early. And I know she did it in a Latino community, she did it in the black community, and she did the right thing by those communities by bringing them in before the cake was totally baked. Mm-hmm.
And you know what? And one of the byproducts of that is we have Michelle Wu in the South End, who's announced that she's going to run for at-large. Yep. She worked on the Elizabeth Warren campaign, and she very passionately told me, you know, that from a, you know, you can look at your city, you know, she lives in the South End, and think something. And then when you're actually out meeting people,
it changes everything.
A totally different. Yeah. And she learned that the innovation that we celebrate in Boston doesn't reach every community. Right. So she can actually represent, you know, she's Asian American, but she can actually represent the African American and Latino communities because she spoke and met with people.
Right. Yep.
And she did work on my campaign also.
Yeah,
so I do want to, I know Elizabeth Warren takes all of the credit there, but Michelle Wu first worked on my campaign. campaign. And also, we also have a strong sister in Ayanna Pressley.
Right.
So we are gaining in strength. And these are voices that we need. There shouldn't be a Boston City Council where there's one woman.
Right.
Definitely shouldn't be that. And we want to see more of that voice, but also perspective. And also, again, we want to see them do lots of other things like on newspapers.
Well, that's the thing. The whole idea is engagement. And so you have to sort of get out there in the street. And it's one thing to have sort of a platform and ideas and great policies. But people in Boston, because of the likes of like Menino and way back to Curly, you got to come and shake hands. That's where it's up.
Wasn't like two-thirds of the city?
That no Menino.
Not even They said that they met him.
Met him.
So you have someone who, and if you want to be in office here, that is definitely the standard. You can't just do advertisements or do commercials. You actually have to really engage people.
Well, hopefully next year we're going to see more candidates of color and women running for, in following up the example of Michelle Wu, who's a great, great candidate. Another big story that I guess was a consequence of two other big stories of the year was the shakeup in the Patrick administration. We saw some changes there. The Health and Human Services Secretary was gone, Public Safety Secretary too, and all this because of the New England compounding center scandal and the drug lab scandal. You know, what are your thoughts on this? How is it?
Well, you know what? Let me say this. I will self-disclose. I worked on the Governor Patrick campaign both times. I was political director the second time. He asked his folks to stay for 2 years after he got reelected. And we're now at the 2-year mark. And folks are deciding whether or not they should stay or not stay. And Dr. Judy Bigby, we have the person who was the architect of the implementation of healthcare reform in the state of Massachusetts, right? It's an amazing, amazing job. We have that department, and by the way, you know, there was the drug lab issues or whatever. There's 40,000 people in that department. So when it really comes down to it, those are real issues, and they're real issues in particular in the neighborhood that I live in, and we want to make sure that those issues are taken care of. But when we look at a change in the heads in the administration, you're going to see the same thing happen when it comes to President Barack Obama. Folks have to rotate in, new ideas and new people have to rotate through. So when people have said that they got fired, I don't think that was the case. I didn't speak to the governor about it, but
heads do have to roll on that one. Yeah. And there's no question about that. Duvall is not afraid to accept the resignation of a head of a department. But again, that drug lab scandal, I mean, no one can sort of predict.
And several administrations.
You know.
I mean, I have a theory that no governor in any state should serve more than a term and a half, because that's when all the bad stuff starts to happen. You know, I mean, the drug lab.
Just a term and a half.
Yeah, that's it. And then just move on and say it's somebody else. Yeah, but, you know, the drug lab issue has so many layers of responsibility overlook. Yeah. It's just horrifying, you know, and the impact, you know, that we feel within, you know, communities that have been distrustful of the police, and then we find out that, oh boy, look it, they should have been distrustful. I mean, I think there's a lot of bad actors that end up in that have been arrested for this, and that's why they're being rearrested. But it's the public trust that has been, and you know, the issue of the lab that was the compounding lab. We needed more regulation. I mean, this is not just an issue under the state purview, but this is
a
federal level of the FDA and regulation to see what these labs are doing. So I think it's actually a broader issue than just falling under, you know, the state purview.
Right. Yeah, on the drug thing, I mean, that is the one part where we tend to look at these scandals in terms of dollars. And that's the estimates have gone to like $340 million or whatever that is. And that's generally in court costs, but the initial funding that Duvall wanted to put out was some of the money, the $30 million, was going to go to reentry programs.
Mm-hmm. That's what it needs.
That single issue needs to be blown up a little bit more, because if you got folks coming out, whether they were guilty or not, but have spent time
they
in jail,
most of them get out.
Come back to the neighborhoods, the very same neighborhoods that folks are going to be coming and asking for votes. What did you do?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And 95% of the people get out of prison.
Yeah.
And right. so I honestly think this is the biggest scale. And we want to make sure that when we speak about core reform, that means that someone gets a job.
Yeah. Mm.
Because if I'm saying stop being on the corner and stop making the money that you're making there, we have to give you a demonstrable alternative to that. Because when it comes down to it, these folks believe in capitalism also. And the other piece, and I think you have a really great point around what happens when they get out. The real underlying issue is none of these folks have had step down.
Right.
They have none of them have done, we haven't done any of the normal things that we do prior to someone getting out. And that reentry piece is going to be key. And also there's a morale issue is when you lock somebody up and then they get right back out, that becomes a morale issue around the law enforcement side. Mm-hmm. But most important is for us to really make sure that we change these men and women's lives by giving them an opportunity and the
right.
skills.
You know, I saw Les Mis last night.
Oh, boy.
And if Jean Valjean could have just gotten a job when he got out of jail,
the
you
movie
know,
had not happened.
It would be all good.
That's how I always read Les Mis. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, speaking of all of these stories, what are the stories that you think the media missed this year in terms of politics?
You know, we mentioned it at the top of the show, the death of Kevin White. And, you know, for many of the younger generation, that's a long ago story. But, you know, Kevin White for the gay and lesbian community was a pioneer, you know, and he was the first mayor in the United States to appoint a gay and lesbian liaison. And, you know, in our world of equality now, that seems like a very small point. But back then, you pretty much had the establishment guy saying, look, this is a community that we want to make sure has an open line to City Hall. And that's what the liaisons to the communities do, is if you have a problem, you call your liaison. So it was a just one of the multi-layers of the story of Kevin White. You know, the big story was here, this big architect of the city passed away. But below it was a lot of work that he did for civil rights at a time when it wasn't easy.
Right. And I got to tell you, for me on Kevin White, I wasn't here. But that legacy that he left was one of the best and the brightest. I mean, the folks that he had in his staff, Barney Frank, Grogan, just the folks that he had assembled, Ann Finucane over at the Bank of America. And you can criticize Menino for being a strong-arm guy, but he has not really created that sort of next generation. People talk in sports about Belichick's tree and who he leaves.
Yep.
Right. And so White left a very impressive roster of folks. And that, again, comes with his own sort of penchant for wanting the best and the brightest to work in city politics, which, you know, 50 years ago, that was big time. Mm-hmm. You know, if you could work in the city, and now politics is sort of lost his sheen.
No
and you
offense
asked,
to you.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Thank you, guys. I truly appreciate that. Okay.
But the thing about the year 2012, and you see that more in Washington, it's just sort of this entrenched partisanship that has just stymied and created this dysfunctional, inertia-filled federal. You talk about the federal government. You can talk a little bit about the state. And the city, city folks do things. You know, you got to go out and do things. You know who they are. But that's one story, just sort of the downside to that gridlock.
Right. And speaking of gridlock that city folks were able to push through,
redistricting.
I think it showed, in particular for communities of color, that there's power. And we were actually able to come to the table with the Coalition of Color, NAACP, folks in the Chinese community. Really, really powerful group of folks who were able to reshape the whole conversation. Because when we started, we said status quo. We said, okay, we'll just change 10 precincts and we'll just fix it. Well, we ended up with a map that is vastly different. Rob Consalvo's district, and I'll just give you, Chuck Turner came before me. There's never been a non-person of color in the seat that I'm in. Mm. My seat is 36% black and 30% white. My good friend Rob Consalvo's seat is now 50% black single race. That's not including Latinos or any other group. That's what we created in this redistricting process. And that showed that organizations of color, not only politicians, but organizations of color, have a voice and are able to shape this conversation in a way that we never could in the past. And I'm really proud of that.
Do you think next year, or even this year in your experience, you're out there in your district and you were for this, the part of the process of the redistricting, did you see any stories that the media missed in your district?
I think the story that we don't tell, in, especially in Roxbury, Dorchester, and Mattapan, are the amazing young people who are in my district. I actually took 25 interns in this past summer. Wow. And they are awesome because some of the ABCD programs work such that if you don't get a job, then you don't get paid, right? The story of positivity, the story of resilience, and the story of young people. I have a young lady in my office right now. Her name is Christian Kraft. She started in my office, and you know where she ended up? She ended up in Carrie's office, and from Carrie's office, she ended up working for Nancy Pelosi.
That's great.
Right? Impressive. And so, and she started in the local...
That's a great story.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, and that's the story.
Yeah,
that
but
doesn't...
it's hard. I got to defend the press. Oh, you knew newspaper folks.
Okay. Oh, yeah,
no, so. I was going to take that because I, you know, I've taken over the. We were talking about this earlier in the green room. I've taken over being the editor, and sometimes I get a little lazy because I don't know what I'm doing. So, you know, getting what we've started to do at South End News is we put the honor roll folks on the front. The kids with the honor roll on the front page. You get those really easy.
Those are great
we really
stories.
Do like graduation. We the valedictorian from. Cathedral High was a South End resident, and we put her on the front page. So there's two rules now we have at the South End. Good news and really bad news. Really has to go. So, you know, at the end of the year, we did some great, mostly good news stories for our two-part year in review. But there's also four murders in the South End, and three of them remain unsolved. You know, and once you get past the, oh, my gosh, there was a murder, this is who the police are looking for, it just falls completely right off the radar. And so we really want to make it good news and bad news on the front page and celebrate the youth. I mean, we lost, in the Dorchester murder, we lost a young man who had been a role model at St. Stephen's Episcopal Church in the South End. He had done every program. He was, you know, helping kids at risk, and he was sitting on his steps in Dorchester and just got shot and died. And, you know, that's the kind of heartbreaking story that we need to keep a light on. The murder still is unsolved. And, you know, at some point, it may never get solved now, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the crime and the murder, the gun use, all those stories are huge. Yeah. And there's still so many, and this is the you want to do the good stories, and you want to have highlight the valedictorians and all, but we have such still systematic problems, like to deal with the class assignment busing problem, for example.
Right. Well, we're going to take a break right now. We're going over the year in local news. Stay on. I'm speaking with Boston City Councilor Tito Jackson, Howard Manley of the Bay State Banner, and Sue O'Connell from Bay Windows and the South End News. You can join us at 877-301-8970. I'm Marcela Garcia, and this is Boston Public Radio. This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Marcela Garcia in for Kelly Crossley. If you're just tuning in, we're going over the year in local news here with me. To go over all these headlines are Boston City Councilor Tito Jackson, Howard Manley of the Bay State Banner, and Sue O'Connell, who's with the Bay Windows and the South End News. Let's talk sports now. It was a huge year for sports. I feel like the biggest story was the Olympics, of course, and we had a local star taking over gymnastics. But the Red Sox, let's talk about the Red Sox. I feel like Fenway Park turning 100 years was sort of like eclipsed a little bit.
Well, it was. Now, I will speak from the heart on this one, not being from around here.
Oh, boy.
I love the Boston teams to do really, really well, but not just the championships. So the thing that marred, which was a beautiful event for all baseball fans, is to see all those guys, Red Sox players, come back. And Johnny Pesky's death was, you know, obviously a horrible thing. But, but they lost that game to the Yankees after being up 8-0 or something, and then they lose. And so last season with that manager who you knew just didn't understand the depths of the Yankee hatred here. I mean, and so I remember his first interview when he was on one of the talk radio shows, and they were asking him about why you have a talk radio show in New York with a Yankee. And he was just like totally oblivious that is not the right sort of touch you want to have in Boston against the Yankees. So So that the Red Sox were sort of disappointing. The Patriots got to the Super Bowl, lost.
But lost. Horribly.
See, this is what happens. You see, this is our out of state friend. We still love you. The Patriots obviously had
they did well.
We're getting our groove back.
Get it back.
We're getting our groove back, and I think we'll
a little bit. I think.
I still
remain a bit skeptical.
This is the challenge.
About the Patriots.
This is the challenge of being a parent these days. You know, my daughter has experienced championship Bruins,
right.
championship Red Sox,
right.
championship Red Sox, championship Patriots,
yeah.
and championship Celtics. Her expectations are completely, you know, so let them lose for a little while. Let the heartbreak come back. We lost something when the Red Sox won the World Series.
Yeah, so you're right.
There was that chip. You're good point.
I agree.
I think the Celtics are going to help you this year.
I was going to say, the Celtics.
The Globe columnist, I forget who it is, it says, you know, the Red Sox killed my father and now they're coming after me. I mean, we need a little bit of that angst back. We need some of that trauma to really get in the, you know, to really root for them when it's not just pink hat Red Sox.
The best line I ever heard about being a Red Sox fan was there was some comedian that said something like, being a Red Sox fan is like watching The Wizard of Oz and Dorothy dies at the end.
Heartbreak all over.
It is heartbreak. I think the Patriots, I'm confident in my Patriots, and I think they're going to pull it out.
What about the Celtics?
I think the Celtics are going to be a great player. We definitely do miss Ray Allen. I think we miss the leadership of, mm-hmm. of Ray Allen mm-hmm. in the locker room and also on the floor. I think they're going to be a great playoff team, though.
I don't know if they're going to make it to the playoffs because the age is number one. They got blown out by the LA Clippers last night. And Rondo, I don't know if he is at that, what you would call general level. Mm. He's a good sergeant, but he hasn't moved up. And at that point guard, he's got that little Rondo thing that's just not working to the next level.
Let's talk media now.
Okay.
That was quick. Why?
Do you have anything to say?
We only got 40 minutes here.
Yeah, right? You know? No, it's interesting. I'd like to talk media with you. Yeah. The Phoenix goes glossy.
Yes.
WFNX.
Yes.
Unplugs the mic.
Yes.
Marty Batterin leaving the Globe.
Yes.
Brian McGrory taking over. How is all of this going to play out?
Well,
next year?
Full disclosure is Bay Windows and South End News are clients of the Phoenix Media Communications Group. They print and deliver us, and I'm a former Phoenixite. I work there and worked at FNX as well. You know, I think that the move to glossy was great for the Phoenix. I think it they took Stuff at Night, which was their sort of lifestyle magazine, Nightlife, and they put it together. I think it gave new life to the Phoenix in general. Because I think when people read the Phoenix, I know when I was selling ads for the Phoenix, people would be like, we don't have any restaurants in here. You don't have enough news. And now they're able to have
everything
and enough of it. You still have got David Bernstein's great political reporting.
Chris Farone
doing his great Occupy crazy stuff, taking LSD and going to conventions. You know, and you've got some good lifestyle stuff. And it looks great. So
yes.
I think it's a win-win.
And it would really look nice with me on the cover.
It would be.
I think I would.
You
I
want
think,
to sit in
the
Hall
of Fame?
On the
right
man
of the
year. It was State House.
Oh, that's right.
The State House best looking. They could do City Hall.
City Hall.
City Hall best looking.
There it is.
I think that's a great addition.
That's your cover. Oh,
Ayanna May say something.
Yeah, that's true.
Best looking man. Oh, yeah, because Mike Ross is a
body.
I've been exfoliating, and my cucumber ginseng peel-off mask is ready.
It's working.
But the FNX stuff is really the heartbreaking stuff, because FNX was a great it always reminds you sort of like the Man Ray nightclub idea, you know, that no one talked about it, and then it's gone, and everyone misses it. You know, FNX always was tough to get ratings because of the way Arbitron worked in the day. College kids don't have a landline, don't have a residence, so they didn't get the ratings. But, you know, radio in general, except for lovely WGBH, is really hard out there. You've got lots of rumors circulating about these automated, music playing stations.
Yeah,
WTKK
is going to apparently play now.
And Michael Graham's
is gone. Michael Graham is gone from TKK. FNX now was doing, I don't know what they were playing originally, and now they're playing electro music, sort of like an Abercrombie.
Well, it's online. I think it's an online.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you mean the one.
Yeah, they've got an Abercrombie music, whatever the call letters are, and they've got somebody from from, you know, a national office, so there's no local music, and it's just as awful.
Well, the interesting thing was that a lot of people from FNX migrated to Boston.com, and they live on Boston.com, and WFNX, as it was, is run by the Phoenix Online, too. So is there a future for online radio? That's, I guess, the question.
It's a great revenue stream, you know, and I've listened to Boston.com radio. It sounds great, and it's, you know, for all of us, I mean, back to the earlier, why don't we do more good news? Because we need more advertising to give us more pages.
Well, that's just it.
You know,
and that's the challenge.
We can't, if we don't have enough pages, we have to dedicate it to the bad news because that's going to impact society more. If, you know, Boston.com has a great revenue stream with very low overhead expenses to do it.
They
I think it's
stuff.
A
yeah.
great way to go.
And you'll see, I mean, because this has been a very difficult, and I'm just speaking for print now, very difficult times over the last decade when you start seeing profits drop by like 80%, even at the Globe. Brian McGrory, a good buddy of mine, has got a very difficult task because how do you balance the good news with the bad news with the revenue? Mm-hmm. And so any ideas that anybody comes up with, everyone is seeing how it works. And then and hopefully it can, you know, resonate among viewers and listeners and readers. But there's still, I just don't, I mean, I've been doing it for 30 years. And
Go ahead.
Can I just start?
Sure.
But the other thing is, though, I think this also makes the Banner and the South End News
more relevant.
And it makes you more relevant.
Well, that's
because
true.
People are more segmented now than they've ever been.
Well, community newspapers, I think, we didn't enjoy the big profits that the dailies
never did.
Never did.
Right.
So,
nor did we have the big losses.
Right, exactly. And I can take the trash out. You know, I know that Marty Baron wasn't taking the trash out at the Boston Globe.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Or delivering the paper.
Or delivering the paper. Yeah. I mean, you know.
Parsing sentences.
So we can do that. We have the flexibility to do that. But at the same time, I think, you know, I don't know Brian, but, you know, I know of him and I knew Marty a little bit. And, you know, I remember I said to Marty Baron one time, monetizing content, and he got really mad at me that was a terrible thing to say. I don't want to talk about monetizing content. I think Brian has his ear more to the ground on ways that it's not just, you know, when we talk about newspapers, it's not just about being on the tablet or being in print. It's what we offer, you know, who we serve. And I think Brian truly understands that and is going to have
online
a much more
too,
local.
You think?
But there's this balance, again, with just sort of that hard journalism for what I have found that people really want out of a newspaper is like public service. You know, like,
well,
where do
say,
I go? You know, what do I do? And where are these restaurants? And that kind of format.
In terms of that, what do you think Marty Baron's biggest legacy is going to be? Stories that he... Howard.
No, I got to tell you. I mean, Marty is a great guy and a great editor, but I don't really get a warm... And I don't mean warm in a human sense. I mean, just like, you know, I can't name what his big legacy is.
There
I think
were several
he resisted,
Pulitzers that were there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the big stories. But yeah. I think he resisted the Boston.com. I think And I don't know that he led the way we wanted him to lead on same-sex marriage. We expected the Globe endorsed, and I'll talk to any, you know, any Globe editorial side person. They'll say, but we did this. I said, yeah, but you didn't do that. And I think that he didn't lead on same-sex marriage the way we hoped the Globe would.
That's interesting.
They did lead, but we had expected more from them.
And they almost endorsed me in 2009.
Almost.
There was always a gap when you read a Globe story. And if you happen to know something about that story and what you read, there is always a gap. And I don't know how much of that is on Marty as it is on the loss of institutional memory at that paper with all the buyouts.
Right.
But it's a very, very difficult road right now.
What about the story that they just ran, the 5 or 4-part story on
68 blocks?
Yeah. What do you think?
I thought that was a really important story, and I like the perspective. Okay, well, okay. I'm just a reader. Okay, so we have our media folks. I thought it was an important story.
Here's the deal. Well, Howard's been probably doing that every week for the past 52
what
weeks
is your
in one way or another.
You do it every week. Exactly.
Well, yeah. I mean,
and they should do it.
And I live in the neighborhood. In fact, there was someone who was just shot there the other day, and so I thought it was wordy. I thought it didn't really have a point. But then again, I'm really not a good critic of that because I really wasn't interested in reading it.
Because you already know what's going on.
And I think from the community newspaper standpoint, when I read a story about the South End, I want it to be something that I'm not covering or something I can't cover, something I don't have the resources to cover. I want it to be expansive. I want it to, you know, use – I know the Globe also has resource problems. I don't – you know, I'm not doing
– Well, I think the problem is the audience. Your audience is not the same audience that the Globe has.
It's not. And I think with this story, we know this. I live there. Mm-hmm. But when it comes down to it, my friends who – I actually spoke with many of my friends who are suburban. They didn't know that that's
true.
What happened.
Because
told it from the perspective – I think an important perspective from the perspective of individuals, not the community organizations, because mm-hmm. we oftentimes cover community-based organizations and from that perspective. But what does it mean to families? What does it mean to normal people? And also, what does it mean to the people who've done, quote unquote, the right thing and the outcomes don't turn out correctly? That's, I think, what I took mm-hmm. most from that 68 block story. And so, I again, to folks who actually do it, live it, see it on a regular basis, I think it may not be as significant. But when it comes down to a broader audience, mm-hmm. I think it might push things.
I want them to. I mean, I think my issue is that I'm glad they did it, and I agree with you, Tito, exactly, that they needed to reach that statewide audience, that, you know, Boston, greater Boston suburban audience. But at the same time, I want them to do more of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
that's what I want more of. And I guess my reaction to it is that it was just, yeah, of course, you should be doing this. This is what you should be doing.
Right.
And they spent some money. They actually rented an apartment. Right, yeah, so they spent some money.
Yeah.
They rented an apartment mm-hmm. in the neighborhood,
and they
gave some resources. What, five or six folks who worked?
Well, a bunch of people, a lot of space. My concern is again that the readership of the Globe, the gap that we're talking mm-hmm. about, and I don't know if the gap is completed with a story about woe is me. What we're looking for, because there's so much news about the shootings mm-hmm. and the murders, and they're in Roxbury and there's Mattapan, but there are other folks who are touched by that, mm-hmm. but who have gone on and done wonderful things.
So is that what you want them to do?
That's news. I mean, if by definition, it's mm-hmm. not when the... So if that would be so unusual, let's find those people mm-hmm. and how did you... So again, to Sue's point, which is, look, there's a big world out there that is definitely a factor. Again, it gets to gun control, it gets to education, it gets to mental health care, it gets to all those issues. But when you see it from a narrow point of view of a guy in a house and there's shootings all around, that doesn't do anything for me. It just doesn't.
Let's just look to 2013 now.
Now that we've given them our free advice.
Forward.
Forward. Not back. Not backwards. In terms of the stories, I mean, obviously putting aside the Senate race of Senator Kerry's seat, what are the stories that you think are going to be huge next year? Is Dow going to take over? Because that's kind of the precedent.
I think there's a precedent there, but I think there's a more local and more important story, I think, for folks in Boston, which is that of school assignment. Where are the young people in the city of Boston going to go to school? Is there going to be equity in our system? And this, quote-unquote, getting rid of, quote-unquote, busing, right, the $80 million that we spend there, knowing that $40 million goes to special education, so we're not actually even speaking about $80 million. Another $5 million goes to charter schools, and that number is going to go up. And then we spend $1.5 million sending people who actually go to private schools. That's on our dime. We need to make sure that every young person in the city of Boston has an opportunity to go to a good school, and meaning physical plant, meaning a school that has the resources, meaning schools that actually have books in the libraries, and also the best teachers. So when it comes down to it, I think in terms of the future of the city of Boston, what we do relative to school assignment will be a defining moment in the year 2013.
So education, of course, now minorities being the majority in the Boston mm-hmm. public school system, that's what I'd like to see more in the media. 87%
of the students in the Boston public school system are Black, Latino, and Asian. 80% are Black and Latino. So when we look at how we change the future and the future trajectory of the city of Boston, knowing that we don't have oil under the ground, but what we sell here are smart people and good-looking mm-hmm. people like yourselves. That's what we're selling. So when it really comes down to it, the most important thing that we can do is to help that pipeline of young people do well so that they can go to the colleges and universities that are right next to their schools. They need to be able to get into BU and Northeastern, and we don't have the trajectory right now relative to that individual issue. If we do not fix this, then we are going to have a long-term issue in the sustainability of the city of Boston.
You know, from the South End perspective, I think we actually have a very energized electorate. And I think it's the first time. You know, South End does not have its own district to represent. And in the last district race with Bill Linehan, who's our existing city councilor who represents the South Boston, Chinatown, and the South End. And the South End has not had an elected official, you know, someone who's from the South End, you know, representing the South End. And
Byron Rushing.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean in the city council. Yeah. And it's been really difficult to get that that electorate excited. And I think what happened with the Suzanne Lee challenge against Bill Linehan, which brought up all sorts of issues of, you know, where Menino stood and who he was supporting and Chinatown and the South End.
And she lost
She came so close to winning that it really was a wake-up call that if the South End and Chinatown can work together and parts of South Boston, they actually can have a coalition that can get a candidate elected. Not, you know, you can Bill Linehan might be the guy for you if that's how it is.
Right,
but it really
right.
did wake up, I think, the South End into ways that they can move forward and get an election. And that also goes into the school issue.
Right,
you know?
Of course.
Well, and that's exactly right. I mean, you have an energized electorate and you have a real clear issue. And so mm-hmm. one of the stories for 2013 is what happens to that grassroots political activism in 2012 that can sort of force and dictate and bring to the conversation this idea of public education, not just to bus them from one bad school to another, but to improve all the schools. Mm-hmm. And so that has to be sort of a gap. But again, that's a hard issue when people are they're on the grind, trying to make money mm-hmm. now. And so what happens is they're not thinking about 20 years from now educating these first graders and second graders, but 20 years goes by quick.
It definitely does. And they only get 1 year. Right? Yep. So hopefully you only get 1 year in first grade. Hopefully you only get 1 year in second grade. And so giving them the opportunity, I think, is important. The other thing that we also have to do is to invest in the physical plants of the schools. Mm-hmm. We had conversations about Boston Latin Academy and moving the actual school. So you put us in a situation, the city councilors, to have the most engaged parents in the city of Boston pulling us in the direction of fighting over a building, which is one of the most important building blocks that we have. So I think we have to do a better job relative to having a plan with school buildings. And, you know, Newton North has a nice $215 million
Taj Mahal school.
Right. How are you doing, Seti?
Yeah.
But when it comes down to it, I'd like to see a new Madison Park High School.
Right.
I'd like to see a bunch of new high schools as well as other buildings in the school system in the city of Boston.
Or we could bust to Newton. That would
work. Right.
Right.
We tried that.
Yeah, we did. Yeah,
I know.
Yes,
you
exactly.
did try that.
But, and that's, you know, to your point.
But it works.
No. But I think you make a really good point. When we are MECO students, mm-hmm. Students who are in charter schools, students are in private schools, we need to make Boston Public Schools a real and true option for them. And we need to continue to have and use the model of not moving around schools.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so that's the thing. When it comes to charter schools, what they do is it's mission-based. Everyone kind of subscribes to the same thing. They have really nice facilities. You have a good thing going on.
And they perform.
Mm-hmm. But what we've done a lot is jostled students around. We moved to Mission Hill School over to the Agassiz School. How do you build that connectedness?
If we're
saying that we don't want to bus students, but we're going to move schools, right? So it's counterintuitive on that regard.
Well, thank you so much. We have been going over the year in review here with Boston City Councilor Tito Jackson, Howard Manley of the Bay State Banner, and Sue O'Connell with the Bay Windows and the South End News. Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
You are awesome, and the music is awesome.
Yes.
Wiki.
Now we're going to bring a little summer into this day with a look at tequila. It's not just for margaritas anymore. I'm Marcela Garcia. You're listening to 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.